All right, Tim Kirkjian coming up from ESPN. Game 2 of the World Series tonight. The Dodgers bats came alive, and Mookie Betts, Cody Bellinger, they went off last night. And that Bellinger celebration, man, that's got to stick for the rest of his career, right? He's got to do the foot tap with every teammate. He can't go back to the shoulders. He can't go back to fist bumps, high fives. That's his. He owns it. No one's ever done the foot tap. It's a great move.
And he's the MVP, is he not? Like, he's been putting a clinic on.
Mookie's getting a lot of love. Mookie's getting a lot of love.
So Mookie's your guy then, right now?
Yeah. Or Seager's got it. Well, it's too early. It's one game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Seager was the NLCS MVP. He had 5 or 6 homers.
Yeah, throughout the playoffs, Seager, like, that lineup is nuts.
It's disgusting.
Like, nuts. The fact that they got Mookie and Seager and Bellinger, they don't even hit 1-2-3. They move Bellinger back in the lineup just to kind of spread out the wealth. They are so loaded, so good. And that was a big one last night, to no one's surprise. And I think Tampa's got to get one tonight. You know, I think Snell's got to put on a clinic. I think Cash has got to get to that bullpen a little bit quicker if need be. Got to win tonight. You can have 2-0 against this Dodger team. You're in big trouble. And to tee up game 2 of the World Series and look back on last night, we're joined now by ESPN MLB author and analyst Tim Kirkjian. How you doing, Tim?
I'm well, fellas. How you doing?
We're doing very well. It's been a very strange year for everyone in 2020, but we're supposed to have the World Series in October with some fans in the building. Did it feel somewhat normal for you last night compared to other World Series in the past?
Nothing felt normal this year, but the games have been really good, and October has been great. Now, it's not as great as when there are 50,000 people in the stands. I mean, I did games remotely, and I just kept asking myself, imagine what this place would be like. Doesn't matter what the stadium is. If there were 50,000 people screaming at this moment, and you're not going to replace that with no fans or even a few fans. So, yes, that part was missed, but baseball has made a remarkable recovery from where it was in, say, the middle of July. And to get to this point, I think is a tribute to everyone involved that somehow they pulled it off, and I think we're all thankful for that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a great ride. The 2 Game 7s over the weekend were hopefully going to be a sign of things to come in the World Series, but it was rolling that way through about 3 innings last night, and then the Dodgers decided we're going to have enough of that, and they took off. And now the story today and the story postgame was Glasnow sticking in and throwing 112 pitches, and why didn't Cash go to the bullpen a little bit earlier? How did you feel about the decision live, and how did you feel about the decision after Cash explained it postgame?
Well, I was confused. First off, Kevin Cash is really good at this, not just being a manager, but making pitching changes and having a feel for when a guy is ready to come out and when he should stay in. And having said that, I was confused why Glasnow would even come out for the 5th inning last night. He threw 30 high leverage pitches in the 4th inning and really struggled. He must have bounced a dozen balls last night. And even though he's 6'8 and young and was still throwing 98 miles an hour, he just didn't look like the same guy to me. He didn't look sharp. And that game was 2-0, 2-1. And I'm still surprised with that deep, versatile bullpen that he left him out there for 112. Glasnow's never thrown 112 pitches in any start. No Ray has thrown 112 pitches since 2018, and no pitcher has thrown 112 pitches in this postseason until Glasnow last night. So it just broke from the plan that they've had with their other pitchers. They took Charlie Morton out after 66 pitches. But to second-guess Kevin Cash is really not a smart thing to do. But I also didn't totally buy his explanation after the game. So this happens. This is the beauty of baseball. We can sit the next day and discuss this all day long.
Well, Tim, that was what was so confusing is you watched over the weekend, Charlie Morton comes out with at 60-some-odd pitches, and he's rolling, and you're thinking, oh. And this was just after Blake Snell had been pulled and was not happy. What do you think actually did happen? Do you think he just, I don't know, like, what do you think actually happened with Kevin Cash that he would kind of let it change so drastically?
Well, when he really got in trouble in the 5th inning, there's no doubt he needed a strikeout. This is what Kevin Cash said, and he said he was the best pitcher on our team to get a strikeout at that point, especially after the double steal and their runners at second and third. And he didn't get a strikeout. But Glasnow did have the highest strikeout rate of any starting pitcher in the big leagues this year. He had over 14 per nine innings, and his stuff was still good, but he wasn't locating it properly. But that was the explanation for why he stayed in. And let's not hide the fact that they're going to need that bullpen. If they're going to win this series, they're going to need that bullpen to work an awful lot, and maybe didn't want to blow it out in game one, but game one is really important in this series, especially how good the Dodgers are. And again, I'm surprised he didn't go to that pen earlier.
With Tim Kirkjian, MLB on ESPN analyst. So you wake up today, and it's the beauty of social media and talk radio, sports radio. We're all a part of this. Is because Mookie Betts is playing, that means he's better than Mike Trout, who's not playing, right? Because we get to watch Mookie make all these incredible catches and, you know, run the bases the way he does and hit the ball the way he does. He's a spectacular player, and he has been for a number of years. Mike Trout is the victim of recency bias. But there seems to be a fair amount of people, reputable people, baseball lifers, pushing this idea that Mookie is as good as Trout, if not better. Is it a reasonable debate, and how do you feel about it?
It's reasonable. Mike Trout's the best player in baseball, period.
Yep.
Mookie Betts is a better defensive outfielder than Mike Trout, who's very good, by the way. He throws better than Mike Trout, who throws well. And he runs the bases, maybe not as fast, but he runs the bases better than Mike Trout. But Mike Trout is still the best player in the game. But last night and this postseason has proven why, over the last 5 years, if you're picking a second best player in baseball, I think it has to be him, given the overall game that he plays. I mean, not only hit a homer last night, but he stole two bases in one inning. And then the base running play he made, getting a great secondary lead, a great jump off a third, and scoring on a one hopper to the first baseman. Maybe five guys in the big league score on that play. Maybe five. But Mookie did with relative ease because he's such a smart player. And that's the part that people miss, is what a student of the game that he is, and a leader in so many different ways.
So I'm with you on that, and I've been a believer in that for a couple of years, that, you know, Trout is clearly number one. I think Mookie Betts is number two, absolutely. But where would Seager come in on that list, and where would Bellinger come in? Are they top 10 guys, top 15? I mean, how much talent does this Dodger team have at this point?
Well, the way Seager has played in this postseason, he's a top 15 player, because this is ridiculous that a shortstop of this size can play that position as well as he does defensively. And he hit five homers in the LCS. No shortstop had ever hit four homers in a postseason series. He hit five. That's how good he is. And the three walks he took last night just shows you he's spitting on pitches that he wants no part of, and that's a hard thing to do, especially in this day and age. As for Bellinger, I mean, he's had a couple of really good games here now, back-to-back. He had really had some World Series struggles until last night, one for his last 24, 13 strikeouts, no RBIs, but he had a big home run last night. And let's not forget, he is still the reigning MVP of the National League. And his 2019 season was a joke, how good that was. And he won a Gold Glove. He is a freak athlete who is showing that not just at the plate. He's way faster than people think, and he's a tremendous defensive center fielder.
Well, and Tim, I think with Seager, people forget that he was like fifth, I think, in MVP voting a few years back. So that kind of makes me want to ask you, the Dodgers obviously spend lots of money, but I do feel like they've kind of unlocked something. Like, they've got Gavin Lux, who people think is maybe the best prospect in baseball, second best prospect in baseball. Like, what have the Dodgers done to kind of get themselves to this point where they are such a juggernaut like Hayes is talking about with all these stars?
Well, what they've done is they've shown remarkable patience by not trading any of their top prospects, Gavin Lux and a few years ago Will Smith, who can really hit, by the way. And they hung on to all those guys knowing they are the future of the team. This is the strength of Andrew Friedman, who runs the baseball operations. He knows a good young player when he sees it, and he's just not dealing with them. And he waited. And he waited and waited, and people said, what are you waiting for? Well, he was waiting for Mookie Betts to come along, and then he got him. And he was not going to trade his best young players, and this is why the Dodgers are in such a great position now, and moving forward, because their general manager, the guy who had to show so much impatience in Tampa Bay, showed the same patience in L.A., and now is in a position where this team should be good for a long time.
With Tim Kirkchin, before we get you out of here, I want to pose you a question about the postseason, which is only about a week away. And once the offseason starts, we're going to find out how much money is going to get splashed around and how much you'll be waiting for Marcus Stroman, who we obviously have a connection to up here in Toronto. And Mark has been pretty active on Twitter the past couple of days, calling out Cashman in New York and calling out the Yankees staff and saying that he's going to have a 3.5 wins above replacement year in, year out, if not better than that the rest of his career. And his numbers are what they are. He's got a 3.76 lifetime ERA, and a lot of those innings are in the American League East. But he's also had a bit of a yo-yo career. He goes up and down in terms of season over season. So what kind of market would you project for Marcus Stroman? How many teams are going to be out there, and how much money could we be talking about for Marcus?
Well, I love that kid, and he could pitch for me any day. Let's be clear about that. But I'm not sure about any free agent coming out this year, because so much money was lost by the owners, and they are acknowledging how much they lost, that I'm just not sure how much there's going to be left for somebody other than Trevor Bauer, George Springer, JT Realmuto. It's going to be, I think, and I hope I'm wrong, a very difficult winter for a lot of free agents, because the owners are going to say, we don't have any money for you guys. Sorry, you became a free agent at a bad time. Now, I think Marcus Stroman will get a multi-year contract, but he's not going to get anywhere close to what he would normally get, because, again, the finances are just so far down right now. And I checked with someone the other day about the free agent market, and he goes, I have no idea. This is a guy in the business. He works for a club. He said, I have no idea where this is going, and neither does anybody else.
Yeah, that's not what free agents or agents are going to want to hear. And maybe GMs for that matter, right? They might want to spend some money and bolster their lineup, and the owners may just not allow it to happen. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Game two tonight. It should be fun. Enjoy it, and thank you for doing this, Tim.
Okay, guys. See you.
Tim Kirkchin from ESPN. Yeah, Marcus Stroman is he's got to be careful, man. I don't think he's helping himself, you know, popping off about Cashman and the Yankees. And
he's very unlikable. There's another guy that just brings it upon himself. He's unlikable. And like, even though, like, he's a really good player. But
his numbers are quality. Like, again, he's got a 3.76 ERA lifetime and a lot of those innings, again, in the American League East. Like, he can pitch. We all know he can pitch. But he is not a Cy Young contender, right? He's not a guy that's won before. Now, that's a lot of based on the surroundings. And he might argue I was there at 15 and 16, which he was.
Right.
But I just think, you know, if the tipping point is, you know, this guy is just going to is not someone who's called out a bunch of people, and this guy has, then he might lose out on that. And
sure.
He's also, you know, there's a difference between confidence and bluster. And when you keep saying you're this, and I'm going to do this, after a while, it's like, no, I don't think you're actually going to do that, Marcus.
No, it's
like, we don't
annoying.
Need to hear all the time exactly about how you're just getting better and you're going to be the best. And it's like, no, you're not. You are who you are. He is who he is, and that's not going to change. He's already in his prime, if not at the back end of it.
Yeah, I've never been a fan of the way he conducts business, and maybe he's a smaller guy, so he feels he needs to act bigger. He's just a good player, and you know, own that. Just be confident. But just everything he does sometimes just kind of it's got a I don't know what the right word is. It's not arrogance. Is it a touch of arrogance?
Well,
I guess
it's a chip on your shoulder, but point where it's like, we get it, but just. You know, go out there and perform and go out there and play. Like, every year, we heard it in Toronto, was, I'm going to dominate this year. I'm going to be the best this year. And then he wouldn't be the best, right? Like, he's not up for the Cy Young.
Just lip service.
But
he's unlikable doing it. That's the thing. I'd rather root for the guy, but because of the way he conducts himself, you almost root against him. Because you're like, I want to see this guy fall on his face because he acts like a jackass.
I'm curious to see what kind of market's going to be out there for him.